welcome to Ollie Betterworth's downloadable weekly podcast program. The guest this week, everybody's favourite ukulele player, it's Rosie Holt!
And welcome to Series 2, Episode 12 of Ollie Bettesworth's Downloadable Ollie Weekly Podcasting Champion with me, Ollie Bettesworth. My guest this week is a lovely young up-and-coming comedian called Rosie Holt, who, I'll be honest, I hadn't really formally, properly sort of met, really, I don't think, prior to the recording of this podcast. We'd briefly chatted, I think, at a gig. And I found her very funny and nice, and I thought I would invite her along to a podcast and we'd sort of get to know each other a bit on the show. And I found her very charming and very funny, and I think it's a lovely episode. I've said lovely about a million times, but I think if you listen to the rest of the show, you'll probably soon realise why. I'm not going to blather on for too much longer because I think I'm making kind of an idiot out of myself with my lack of stuff to say. But the episode is long enough as it is, so please do enjoy episode 12 of season 2, if you can fucking believe it, of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast programme with my guest Rosie Holt, as we talk about dance movies, Jilly Cooper novels, and stuff. Enjoy! How are you?
All right, thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Now, I've noticed,
yeah,
as part of your act,
yeah,
talk about sex,
yes,
having sex,
yes,
private parts.
Yes.
Do you think this is becoming behaviour for a young lady?
I think it should be coming behaviour for a lady.
Coming behaviour?
Coming behaviour.
See, you're just slipping in double entendres willy-nilly... Just as a matter of reflex, it seems.
I can't help it. I felt like you trapped me.
Got a grotty mind. So why do you... I mean, it's an... You kind of keep it to yourself, no? Like, if you've got a grotty mind, why inflict it on the public?
I think there's not enough grotty-mindedness from women in public.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone must know the truth.
Do you think there's lots of grotty-mindedness from men in comedy?
Yes. Yes, but people don't notice it, do they? Because it's fine, but...
Because this is something that you hear, like...
Yeah.
They go, oh, the men, or, like, they talk about their cocks all the time on stage and stuff. Maybe I'm not watching enough comedy, but I don't actually think it's that common at the gigs I see. I've got a bit where I talk about my penis, sure, but... but it's not in a, I'm having sex with my penis. It's more like...
Whereas I'm like, oh, I'm having sex with my vagina.
Yeah, that's the bit that's wrong. I find...
terrible.
How's your eventual husband going to feel special if you've already given your present to other boys?
Dude, this actually... I was dating this guy and this happened. he said he felt devalued by my past.
Really?
Mind you, I say past, that makes it sound like...
Your sordid history.
My sordid history. And I don't have a sordid history...
I've seen your act.
It's good, isn't it? It's everyone know.
Hmm.
It's good.
Is honesty always a virtue?
Yes.
We like to hit the very hard philosophical questions early. And also we like to switch to them very abruptly.
Yeah.
To put our guests on the spot.
Like that. Yeah.
Did you always, was it your first instinct to... talk about that sort of stuff on stage?
Unfortunately, it was, yeah. I think...
What was your origin story?
My origin story? Well, when I started doing stand-up, I just got out of a long-term relationship, and I think so I had very much sex on the brain.
Hmm.
And so that ended up on stage.
Right.
You know, also, I think... I mean, I don't think I'm alone, but, you know, you think about sex a lot anyway, don't you? So you end up... But I think my ex...
No, only at appropriate times.
Yeah.
Like, just before.
Just before.
Yeah.
Isn't there a statistic, though, that someone thinks about sex?
Oh, I think that's rubbish. Every 6 seconds?
Every 6 seconds.
How has that been measured? Can you give me the study that's demonstrated that? Can you note down every time you think about sex, please?
Okay.
I found it was, on average, about 6 seconds.
Yeah.
I would spend 5 seconds writing it, and then boom, all right, I've thought about sex again. It might have been because I'm reading what I've just written.
So do you think it means that all the really successful people don't think about sex because they're too busy being successful? Or maybe that's what drives true success?
My friend sent me a quote from, I think, Isaac Newton, I think. And
about
it was
sex.
Something about how being an intellectual means that one has found something that interests one more than sex. I think it was Isaac Newton. Might be making that up, but I can't bother to look it up.
Mm. Poor Isaac Newton's wife.
It doesn't mean that he's not interested in sex at all.
That's what he used to tell her. Yeah. My brain's too big, I can't.
Not tonight, darling. I'm figuring out the mysteries of the cosmos. Oh, no, okay. Yeah. Here's the quote.
Right.
An intellectual is a person who has discovered something more interesting than sex. Aldous Huxley. Aldous Huxley.
I mean,
Brave New World
is very, very sexy, isn't it?
I haven't read it.
You've not read it? Very guess I've read it. I don't know why. I think it's just your grotty mind
that's made it.
I mean, you can't believe it was written in whenever it was written because it's basically in this world where everyone's allowed to have sex all the time.
He's a fucking hypocrite.
No, but he's saying it's bad. But it's got these...
I think you're misunderstanding. He said more interesting than sex. He isn't saying an intellectual is someone who despises sex.
No, more interesting than sex. But I think the fact that Brave New World is, you know, he's written this book which is supposed to be the dangers of a over-sexualised society. Yeah, he's clearly thought a lot about sex to produce the book. You should read the book. I can lend it to you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it's all right.
We'll start a book club.
Yeah.
So you just burned Aldous Huxley there quite savagely.
Too right.
Yeah. You've exposed him.
Yes.
Aldous Huxley exposed.
Yeah.
That will be the tagline.
Take that, Aldous.
Of this
podcast. Give your wife some attention.
I want to bring it back to the thing you said. You think it's important for women to talk more, have grottier minds.
Yes.
Why?
Well, I just think we need to level. Because you're right. Of course, men don't talk about penises all the time. But I think when it does happen on stage, it's kind of overlooked as something where when women do it, people are more kind of like, oh, this doesn't happen. Women don't.
So it's more shocking.
Yeah. Which it shouldn't be, really.
Yeah, but the moment it stops being so shocking is the moment your act dies, Rosie. So
I
don't
know.
Wish that.
That's true. We'll have to talk about politics or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sad time. Wait, guys, I've got jokes about Brexit.
Yeah, oh, God.
Oh, no.
Sour grapes.
Yeah.
I was, because my girlfriend's Italian, it was quite upsetting for her, I have to say, that Brexit thing. Because when she came back from Italy, when she was coming through customs, all she could see were signs that said leave. And I thought, like, that sends quite a direct message, doesn't it?
I had an Italian friend who actually left London because he was so upset by it all.
Oh, really?
He just felt he didn't want to be in London anymore. It didn't feel friendly.
What, even though people wore those, like, what was it, safety
pins? The stickers. The little. I voted Remain. I got in trouble because I was doing a reception job and I stuck a Remain sticker on the reception. It was at a hedge fund.
Oh, really?
They told me off.
Was it because their official position was leave, or because this is an apolitical reception area?
This is not a political reception area.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why are you working for the man, Rosie? More to
the
point.
I need the man's money. Yeah.
It's part of the problem. You're part of the problem.
Isn't it sad? It's okay, though. I'm exposing them from within.
Oh, is that it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, do you still work there?
Well, I temp, so sometimes I work.
So you're going to go from temp to project manager.
Yes.
To CEO.
That's great. That's how temping works.
My first act as CEO is to abolish the company.
There was a CEO once that I was... He was in a meeting and I had to prepare a tea for him. Prepare a tea for him.
Oh, right.
And it was like a special...
I thought you said aperitif for him.
Aperitif.
You had to aperitif for him.
I had to aperitif for him. I had to prepare...
Tea for him.
A tea for him.
Mm.
And it was a herbal tea.
Oh.
And I had to do it... I was given a little timer. a little timer. No, it was a little hourglass, and I had to do it exactly 4 minutes.
What?
And then I had to make sure the temperature was a certain degrees, and they told me that if it was a bit under or over, he'd be able to tell and he would send it back.
And this was every time you made him tea?
Yeah.
It was timed.
I was given a little kind of tray of all the right things to make his tea perfect.
And was he a big shot?
Yeah.
Okay.
But still, I thought that as a temp, I don't think you ever... I think when you're making people teas and having to time it, I don't think you ever reach the dizzy heights of being CEO. A CEO. Yeah.
That's where you start. That's where Bill Gates started.
Is it?
Probably not. I don't know. Though I used to have to do a lot of that sort of stuff because I worked for Avalon for 3 years. And I was their runner for one of them. So that was my life, was making teas and coffees for much more successful people.
I hate that.
And they were all comedians too. And then I started doing comedy while I was working there. So it was that a bit...
Was that horrible? Was it soul-destroying?
Oh, yeah. I don't think my soul ever recovered. I think I've got a permanent kind of aversion to the industry ever since that. Because I just feel like I know what they're like. I know what the culture is around those sorts of places. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And why would you want to be a part of it? Well, I suppose because it's lots of money, isn't it?
No, but it...
And it looks like success.
There is nothing... I had a similar thing because I trained as an actor.
Oh.
And then I worked for a bit as a waitress at the BFI.
Uh-huh.
And it was horrible. Because I was serving people. I said the worst thing was I served this woman and she was a producer and I'd met her before. I'd met her at a party when I was at drama school and I was feeling all confident and like, I'm going to be successful, it's going to be great. And it was all fine. And then I bumped...
How long did that last?
My feeling, I'm going to be successful, I'm going to be great.
Yeah. Well, you said it was like that was when I was all enthusiastic. I just wondered...
Well, no, I was at drama school for 3 years.
When did the dream die?
The dream died pretty quickly, I think. But I wrote to her after drama school and I said, I hear you're casting for this, can I be considered?
Ooh.
And she didn't reply, which was fine. But then I bumped into her on the tube the next day.
Ooh.
And we had this really awkward conversation and I thought, the whole time I was thinking, do I mention to her that I've written to her? And then she mentioned this job she was doing, which was the one I'd written about. And I went, oh, actually, I wrote about that. And she went, yeah, I got it.
Oh.
And then, so that was horrible. So I changed it. But then, a few weeks later...
Honestly. Noma.
It gets worse. No, I can't. But basically, 3 weeks later, I was waiting at the BFI and she came in and I thought, oh, bloody hell, I can't.
Yeah.
This is awful.
Oh, God.
So she sat there.
It's like out of a sitcom.
Yeah. Well, actually, I did write a scene of it to sort of cheer myself up because it was just, I couldn't believe it had happened. So she was sitting there at the table and someone else was serving her. And then he had to go and he said, Rosie, can you serve table number 9? I was like, oh, God. So I went and I brought her this tea and she was on the phone. And I sort of, I put it down and I nodded at her and she nodded at me. And then I was sort of cleaning around her in the different tables. And then she went off her phone and she spilt her tea. And she turned to me and she went, excuse me.
Oh!
Excuse me, can I? And she sort of pointed at spill. And I went, get a cloth. And she went, yeah. So I went off to get a cloth and I thought, maybe she doesn't recognise me in my waitress garb.
Yeah, maybe.
I was thinking she can't know who I am.
No.
So I got the cloth and I went to her table and I started mopping up her tea and she just sort of looked at me while I was doing it and I went, so, anyway, how have you been? She went, yeah, great, Rosie, really busy. You know how it is.
Did you poison her tea?
Oh,
her
God, that was, the worst, tea afterwards. The worst bit was I was so desperate for a job, I was still unfailingly nice to her.
Oh.
And I said, oh, I'm doing a little show, actually, around the corner. And she went, well, you've got my email address. And I went, I do. And it was horrendous.
Oh,
I think that's the problem with... That's why you should never waitress or run at places... that you're kind of interested in.
Rosie Holt, what's your first choice?
I really like, love, in fact, dance movies.
Dance movies?
Yeah, I've seen
Step
so
Up to
many.
The Streets?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Or is it Step Up to the Streets?
Step Up to the Streets.
Because there is a colon.
I don't know, but I think it's there for, to make people wonder. They're not sure.
It's ambiguous.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's very clever. So, those, and what other ones?
Well, all the step-ups. There's now 5 step-ups.
What is the... There's one that called You Got Owned. What is it? You Got...
No, You... Oh, flip, I can't remember what
it's called. You Got Served.
No, it's not called that. It's called something else.
You Got...
I don't know.
Pwned.
But there's also a British one. There's, like, Street Dance.
It's going to drive me crazy.
Charlotte Rampling.
Yep, keep it going.
Street Dance 2.
Street Dance 2?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never good at remembering names. There's
It is called You Got Served. You lied to me.
Oh, it is.
2004's oh, okay. You Got Served.
There's also a burlesque one. There's burlesque with Christina Aguilera.
And you love all of these movies.
I really love dance movies, and they're kind of great for when you're feeling sad.
But they're poor, aren't they?
The dancing, do you know what? I think they're underrated because I think that, okay, if you're going to look at the dialogue and the plot, maybe you'll go, this isn't the best movie. But the dancing is always very good and very talented.
Is that where we got Channing Tatum from? Is that where he's from?
Yes, he was in Step Up 1.
I'm sure he was in Step Up 2. Don't denigrate
the man. He did, you're right. He did appear in Step Up 2, wearing very bad clothes. That always upset me.
What's your opinion on the old Tates? Tatum, Tatles.
I think he's great.
Do you?
He's a very good dancer.
Have you seen Hail Caesar?
No, I so want to see it. It's
his
on my
bit,
list.
I didn't like the film
yeah.
much.
Oh, did you not?
No, I feel like the general feeling about that film was it was a bit disappointing. But he has a scene in it
yeah.
where he does a sort of classic musical dance
was
scene.
Was he great?
Yes, of course he was.
He's wonderful.
I changed my mind about Channing Tatum. No, because I watched White House Down, where he was a tough guy, and I was like, enough of this dancing. Yeah, he's killing people. I like this dude.
Yeah.
And he had chemistry with Jamie Foxx.
I think he's quite a good actor.
Yeah.
He's got good comic timing.
Sure.
But more importantly, he can dance.
Yes.
Yes.
So what is it about these movies?
I think, okay, well...
Do you like musicals in general?
I do like musicals, but dance movies are different. I think I like... Well, they're very sexy, but that's only one reason. I realised, as I said, that I don't want to... Because I don't want to, like, you know...
Grotty,
but I like the fact that they solve things through dance.
Yeah.
That's great. Like, even when having, like... Because in the first Step Up movie... It's a bit more gritty than the
right,
others.
Right, okay.
You know, he's on the wrong side of the tracks and he like gets involved in bad things and he ends up having to sort of work at this dance school where he vandalized.
Oh, it's the quintessential
yeah.
story of the underclass.
And then because he's actually a really cool dancer,
yeah.
he ends up getting together with the female dancer and they have like a dance off, you know. So that was kind of the original, but as you get through more and more Step Up films, which I have, the vandalism, them being like bad boys and bad girls, is literally them just like walking along streets and dancing at each other. So they'll start arguing and they go, okay, let's sort this out with a dance off. And then
like West Side Story, like that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the listeners will not be able to hear my wonderful dance impression there. But
it was spectacular.
It was spectacular.
Where did you get the pyrotechnics?
It's natural ability. But that's the thing. Also, I'm a terrible dancer. I've got no coordination. Like,
right.
I was so... I did a dance class for a bit, and it was so humiliating because the teacher, she took me out and she said, no, you're getting it wrong. And in front of everyone, she was kind of trying to show me moves. And I was so bad that she ended up going, no, I can't deal with her. Someone show her after the class.
Really?
So I'm a terrible dancer. I can't move my limbs. So there's something... I think there's a kind of yearning.
Do you project yourself into? Do you pretend you're the one dancing with Channing
Tatum? I just think how wonderful that'd be to like just be able to be all like sexy and dancing and doing cool things. And they also have really good tummies.
Mm.
They always have really good tummies in those films.
Yeah, say
it's
what
really
you like
good.
About them. Good tummies.
Yeah, really good tummies. Good tummies. Usually good hair.
It's important for a film.
Yeah. And I just like how all the problems are solved through dance. That's great.
Are they still making those? Are there new ones?
Yes.
Because I was aware of it being a bit of a trend for
Step
a while.
Step Up 5 was quite a recent
Step
one.
Step Up 5?
Yeah.
Channing Tatum's long
Actually,
gone from
Step
that.
Actually, maybe it's Step Up 6 No, let me think. No, step up one, that was with Channing Tatum. Step up two is with, like, Bryony, who's, like, in foster care system. And she goes, and then the three is they're like in warehouses.
Yeah.
Four, they're in Miami Beach. Yeah, so it's five now.
Wow.
It's five. Yeah. I can lend you them. I've got quite a few of them.
But has it gone through? Is it the kind of Grease 2 scenario where they're kind of past their glory days?
They are all a bit rubbish. Yeah. I think I just really love them. Like I can go, yes, Step Up 1 is the best.
Yeah.
But I derive a lot of that. For example, in Step Up 2, because you've seen Step Up 2. You've seen Step Up 2?
No.
Oh, because you mentioned that Channing Tatum was in Step Up 2.
I follow Channing Tatum's career very closely, but I haven't seen the movie.
There's this bit where...
I've seen You Got Served.
I don't know if I've seen You Got Served.
Yeah, that's because it's got black people in it, I see. Haven't you seen all of the ones, but without the one with the black cast?
Yeah, then I'm like, no,
God,
no.
Typical white feminist. Mm. No intersectionality whatsoever.
Yeah, any white women. Just white women dancing.
Yeah.
There's this line in Step Up 2 where she's been doing a dance, but no one appreciates her dance. She's like in an underground club. She's quite sad and she's walking home. And then suddenly this guy appears and he's got like his cap on backwards and he goes, "They were just hating on you because you were so dope."
Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, that's great.
You'd love someone to say that
I
to you.
I thought that was a great thing to say to someone. Just
I can say that next time. Next time I see you perform,
a very primal.
Next time I see you perform, and if it doesn't, I mean, I suppose it only makes sense if it hasn't gone well.
Yeah.
But I promise, at some point, I'll say that to you if you want.
Thank you. It'll be really good.
What was it again? They're just hating on you because you're so dope. Because
you
is so dope.
Yeah.
I have to get the.
What's great is he's not actually his character is in that street, so it doesn't really make sense in speaking like that. But it was just I liked it.
Aww.
I liked it.
Okay. But they're critically panned, aren't they?
They are. I mean, they're very overlooked as a,
it's very
as a
low,
genre.
Very low brow.
Yeah. No, but that's what I mean. The actual dancers themselves
you also appreciate
are a thing of talent.
Oh, yes,
they really
so.
Are. They're really good. And they're inventive. And there's always this bit where they go, oh, now we have to get the team together. And they go off and they find like a dancer who like dances like a robot. And then they find another dancer who's like a mechanic, but also some dancers with mechanical things.
Mm.
You know, there's like they bring together all these dancers who can't really act, but who can sure dance.
Yeah,
and I like all that.
Do you wish your life was a bit more like it is in these movies?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was thinking because you know there's always bits in dance movies where you know they're doing some crappy job, but then they go and they still work hard and they're practicing their dance, like you know on balconies and. Things and everywhere and I was thinking it's a sad thing about being a stand-up comic. If you're going to balconies and you're practicing your routine, it doesn't have the same kind of glamour to it, does it?
No.
People just think you're a crazy person. Mm. Where if someone comes around and you're dancing, they'd be like, "What, that person's fucking cool."
I don't know if I'd want to live in that world though. Where I just walk around, there's a whole bunch of people constantly fucking dancing.
No, but you have to stumble on them. That's the whole point. They go to like secret places.
Sorry, I'm late. There was another dance off in the. At the tube station, all hell broke loose. All the ticket inspectors started bussing a move. What's your next choice?
Gilly Cooper novels.
Gilly Cooper novels. Is that a love or a hate?
I love him. I love them.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who... Ollie, how can you not know who Gilly Cooper is? Gilly Cooper wrote these...
Sounds like a woman.
Yeah, but she wrote these novels in the 60s till now. She's been writing novels and they're bonkbusters.
Bonkbusters?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That's their rather unfair name. It means it's novels with lots of sex. But they're like...
Oh, for God's sake.
They're not. They're like romances. They're not porn. They are kind of... But they're kind of, and everyone's really,
the sort of novels that have the word throbbing in.
They're very funny, though. She's a really funny writer. But also, what's quite funny about her is she's very rooted in the 60s. So her mentality about men and women is very rooted in the 60s. And that if you read her later novels when she's older, and it just feels like completely wrong because she's still bringing these rather 60s views. So, for example, she's got like some. Hot 15-year-old called Tanya, and whose dad is like really proud that his friends are perving over her, and this is supposed to be kind of all right. And like, there's a, you know, a sort of gangbang with a 14-year-old, and she doesn't really want to be in it. And it's like, there's all these like really wrong things that you read, and you're like, this is kind of shocking, Gilly. Mm. Well, no, I don't like her later ones. They're all a bit shocking because you're going, no, Gilly. No,
this How am I supposed to masturbate to 14-year-old gangbangs?
It doesn't work anymore. Mm. Also, the funny things about her later novels is she gets less interested in sex and more interested in dogs and horses.
Oh.
So whereas before she used to sort of, you know, talk about some gorgeous guy for pages, now she'll talk about
some gorgeous horse.
Yeah. Literally, it's like
There's but she doesn't combine the two.
No.
Okay, well,
but they're
good.
Great. They're really good stories, and they're very funny. She is a really funny writer, but it is just funny.
Intentionally.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, she is. She's great.
So there's a few yucks between shags.
There's. Yeah, they're not. You know, they're not porn books. They're not erotic lich. They're romantic comedies with sex.
See, ladies always say that it's never porn when the ladies are consuming it.
No, this isn't porn. I can't find it. You know, erotic. It's very different. Gilly Cooper isn't. Gilly Cooper is a good, funny. Well, she's good at writing.
Right.
And she has like this whole cast of characters. So it's almost like when you read, those big sort of novels in Victorian time, like Charles Dickens, where they'd have
and they all like have sex with each other and stuff.
Not always.
It sounds a bit like
them,
porn movies. They have like a cast of characters, and then one, you know, here's a scene where that one goes with that one, here's a scene where that one goes with that one. Sounds very similar.
I just think it's just, for me, Gilly Cooper novels, I mean, they make me really happy. And it's not because of the sex element, it's the romantic element.
Okay.
Because they are very romantic and they're very funny.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, it's slightly a complex love because she's very conservative and she's pretty sexist. Pretty sexist about women.
Really?
And you like there's this one novel where this guy at the end and they get together and he goes and it says something like and he's like he's saying I love you and she's like oh and then it goes his eye grew serious and he goes but I warn you if my women step out of line I do have to hit them or something like that and then
sure.
She goes and she goes okay and then it goes and then we didn't even make it to the bedroom and you're going what Gilly what have you done this
some ladies find it arousing to be dominated by a horrible which abusive man
nothing wrong well no I mean not but you know in that context it's fine but I don't think that's what you're saying
you've not read 50 Shades of Grey it's like it never happened
no,
where we learned that all like women love to just be, you know, roughed up a bit, you know?
Have you read 50 Shades?
No, but I took the lesson to heart.
I don't want to read that. So.
My girlfriend has stopped enjoying our intercourse, sure. Sure. But I'm just keeping it up with the current trends. I don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy it either. But now that I know that she, deep down, loves it.
Yeah.
Then,
all women.
Out of consideration for her, I handcuff her to the bed and punch her in the face a few times. Why not?
Does she like that?
No! No, not at all. But deep down.
Deep down, yeah. And that's what's
important. Good, it's good for her, I think.
But I don't think with Gilly Cooper, I don't think she'd be averse to that. I think it's more that she's like, in other aspects, there's a lot of men telling women off in it. So it's kind of wrong.
Damn straight. I think maybe not so much back then, but right now I think we need a bit more of that. I think women are getting a bit too big for their boots.
More Gilly.
I agree with you. I'm gonna read her novels.
Yeah, they're really good. Really good. They're really funny. They make me properly belly laugh.
But I doubt it, Rosie.
No, it's true. That's why they've endured the test of time. I mean, sort of. But they have.
I think what we're establishing in this section is that you've got poor taste.
No.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens when you bring up your hate choices. How many books has she written? She's prolific.
Well, she's written some... Her big fat novels that she writes, I think she's written about 10, but they're, like, massive. But then she's written lots of novellas as well.
Oh, okay. What would be a good starting point?
Riders. Yeah. set in the world of riding.
Mm.
No, race course.
Mm.
And there's this race course guy called Rupert Campbell Black. He was like the most handsome man
in
Britain.
Sounds like a bit of a cad to me.
Yeah, he's a bit of a cad.
Mm.
But very charismatic. And then there's Jacob, who's like a gypsy rider. And it's like the battle between them.
No, I don't think you're supposed to say gypsy anymore, right?
No, but that's what she says. Yeah. That's what she calls him. I'm just repeating Jilly.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, start with Riders or Harriet. Harriet's a good one. That's one of the novellas.
Harriet.
Yeah.
Are they quite upper-class characters?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, she's very conservative. Mm. So all her characters are kind of upper-class. Or if she puts sort of working-class characters in, they're all, like, very, like, rather kind of stereotypical. Mm-hmm. It's great.
So is she your favourite female writer? Or favourite writer?
He's my favourite writer in the whole wide world. No, obviously I read lots of very intellectual books.
I'm very pro-feminist.
It's just, if I'm feeling down, I will reach for a...
Alison Bechdel or something like that, yeah.
I don't know. Who's Alison Bechdel?
Shh, you're not allowed to... I'm doing you a favour here.
Yes. Yes.
She's the Bechdel test woman.
Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That thing has got out of control.
Did you think?
Yeah.
It's gone too far.
Because it started off as a very useful thought experiment.
But even and she now, said it wasn't supposed to be a kind of...
rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are plenty of pretty progressive, dare I say even feminist movies that probably wouldn't pass it.
Yeah.
Just because the strong, super independent women in there who do all sorts of stuff and have loads of agency... just don't happen to have a conversation with another woman. Like, for example, Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, that's true.
Clarice Starling is undoubtedly a kind of feminist icon.
Yeah, she's
and
brilliant.
And it explicitly references, you know, gender politics and the stuff that she does. And I think the only reason it passes the Bechdel test, just by a little slither, is that she has about a 10-second conversation with another woman about something quite... it's sort of irrelevant. But were it not for that conversation, it wouldn't. And it isn't that conversation that makes the film like a feminist movie.
I think, though, what's good about the test is it has brought attention to the fact
of course, yeah, yeah.
That,
as a thought experiment, it's brought a lot of attention to stuff.
Because there's a lot of window-dressing women in films.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where they just roll their eyes. Or there's a lot of supportive wives and girlfriends in movies. That are very... I was filled... You know, they probably just shut down when the man isn't there.
Yeah.
It's a whole subplot. That
as well they should.
Damn straight.
Okie dokie, let's have another choice.
Okay, so something I hate. Mm-hmm. I feel bad saying hate because I don't think I'm a hater. I'm a disliker.
Mm.
But I really, really dislike salespeople.
Salespeople?
Or people who are selling things to you over the phone.
I tell you what, Rosie, you're only hating on them because they are so dope.
Well, the thing is, you see, when someone is selling something to me, particularly over the phone...
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I say particularly over the phone anyway. If I go in somewhere and someone starts selling, I can't... It makes me panic, and my brain sort of gets a bit confused, and I end up buying things. Or I've basically lost a lot of money or been scammed quite a lot because...
Really?
I can't concentrate. It's like,
Hang up.
If I go into... So if I go into a shop to... I've been screwed over with my phone so many times because I go into phone shops and... And I end up coming out with the worst deal ever. It's like, I'm not a stupid person, but I can't. My brain doesn't work properly when someone
starts... You haven't got
that
technical mind, yeah.
I've got a great technical mind.
Your gender disability.
As a poor, weak woman, it's very hard in the face of a salesperson. Mm. No, I just can't concentrate. If someone starts saying, what about this and this? And then they look so sort of pleading at you, and I... And also, I'm back because I'm a people pleaser. So if someone's like going, "Oh, why don't you get this deal?" And they're so excited about the deal they're selling you that I feel like I have to agree to it, even though if I know it's bad, and it's got me in terrible trouble. I mean, I started talking about this in my set. I once went in for an upgrade for my phone, And I said, I'd like an upgrade on my phone. He said, great, well, first things first, do you use your phone for business or pleasure? And I got a bit stumped by this question. I went, both. And he said, well, in that case, why don't you get two phones, one for business and one for pleasure? And it's one of those
makes
things...
Makes sense.
...where I knew it was a bad idea, but my brain started going into sort of panic mode again. Mm. And he was telling me about the two phones, and I felt that I'd nodded. You know, I was nodding, so I felt like I'd given
him...
if you've nodded... ...carte blanche to sort of talk in detail about these two phones. Mm. And I ended up getting... two phones.
What?
It was awful.
Why?
And I was so poor. I mean, I still am so poor. But it was quite expensive having two phones. And I was so ashamed at what I did.
Double the cost.
And then the worst thing, so I was stuck in this contract for like 3 or 4 years.
Christ.
With two phones.
You had liability.
And then after then, I thought, right, I'm going to get out of this contract.
Yeah.
So I went and I said, I've got two phones, I just want one phone. And he started talking at me, and again, I got all confused and panicking, and I couldn't hear with what he was saying, because he had that sort of eager salesperson look in his eyes. And I ended up with this really, again, really expensive phone contract, and I couldn't work it, but I was stuck into it for 2 years.
Hmm.
So after that 2 years...
Christ alive.
My boyfriend at the time, I said, look, I need to get out of this phone contract, but you have to come with me, because I keep getting... scammed.
You need a man with you.
I need a man. No, I just needed a...
Can I just say, I feel like so far this podcast has set women back several years. Because what have we covered?
No,
that women not. Like dance movies?
We're not women. Rosie likes...
Sex? No,
Rosie
no, no. You,
likes dance
let's not
movies.
Pretend that you're not representing all women at all times.
No, you're right. I'm a spokesperson for all women.
Yeah, as are all women. But especially you, because you're the one here on the show bolstering my... frankly appalling female-to-male ratio that I have.
Yeah.
So as representative of a woman, you have said that women love dance movies, sex novels, and can't deal with
it's not sex novels.
Their own finances.
I definitely can't deal with my own finances. But lots of women can. Lots of women. I mean...
I'm just thinking the next love choices are going to be tampons and...
Oh, I love tampons.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Talk about tampons for days.
Handbags and cake. Oh, chocolate.
Oh, I love cake. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bring it on.
Right. So your boyfriend went with you.
Yeah.
And he set the damn...
He overheard one of the salespeople go, oh, she's this one should be an easy one. Just so.
Oh.
I think I just go in there and I look... sort of, because I'm quite an honest person.
You look exploitable.
I do. I go in there going, oh, which one's best? I don't understand anything. Mm. Oh, please explain it to me.
You should go in with more confidence.
But anyway, I said, you know, so Jack was kind of going, what, you know, you talk to the guy, so what do you want? He was trying to get me to do the work, but he was there as a sort of buffer, you know. He was
bodyguard.
There to help me if I needed him. And I said, oh, I'd like to cancel my phone contract. And
how many phones have you got at this point? Three?
Well, I thought I just had one because I'd had the two. Then I'd gone in after 4 years and said, I just want to have one.
Yeah.
And then I got one, but it was really expensive. I didn't know why it was so expensive.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, I'd like to cancel my phone contract. And he looked at the screen. He said, which one? And I said, what? He said, well, you've got three phones. Which one? And I brought my sort of bill with me and I brought it out and... Jack was going, you've even got three different phone numbers here. How did you not know you've been paying for three phones for 2 years? I said, I just thought they were codes.
Oh.
And I mean, so when I'd gone in to get rid of my two phones and just get one, they just added two more.
One for business, one for pleasure, one for booty calls.
Yeah, I guess so.
Did you, when you had the two phones, did you use them at different times for business and pleasure?
The first year, I was so horrified at what I did. I hid one of the phones in the cupboard.
Oh.
Because it was like a reminder of my ineptness.
Yeah.
That I didn't want to deal with.
Mm.
Then after a year, I thought, I'm going to use both phones. And then I did use that one purposely for business.
For the business that you... for your businesses.
For
the running of your various affairs, yeah.
It was basically when I wanted to send an email from my phone, I would do it from my business phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd feel all adult.
Yeah. People go, oh, you've got two phones. I'd be like, don't talk about it.
I mean, I've got two phones, but it's because I'm very important.
Oh, okay. I've just got one phone now.
Hmm.
So yeah, salespeople.
I feel like it's not really their fault. I feel like the story you've told, it's more about hating your own susceptibility to salespeople. They're just doing a job.
But I think it's like they. I feel they prey on me. I feel like. I mean, I could. I'm not going to, but I could catalogue quite a lot of terrible, awful stories about where I've been. Ended up giving money over the phone, and then as soon as I put down the phone, I'm no longer in contact with the salesperson. I've gone, no, why have I done that? That was terrible. And
have you ever had to try and do sales? Be a salesperson, actively trying to sell stuff.
No, thank goodness. I've done so many different awful jobs.
But they didn't involve.
I don't think any of them involved. Selling anything?
Because I used to work in. Remember that shop? I think it's gone out of business now. Hope it has. Called Game, the computer game place. I used to work there in my gap year, saving money for uni.
Yeah.
And one of the rules was that if anyone was sort of looking at one of the consoles, the computer game consoles worth like 400 quid or whatever, you had to go up and talk to them. And you had to sort of try and get them to buy it. And it was just completely arbitrary because I would go up and I'd say, oh, were you thinking about buying a PlayStation? And then they would say, oh, no, I'm just looking for now. And I feel like that was the point at which I was supposed to talk them into buying something they don't really want right now. And I feel like that's morally wrong.
So you were too nice. And you see, that's why...
Sort of, yeah, but occasionally, but then you'd walk away... Having been told, no, I haven't even got my money with me. I'm just waiting for my wife. I'm just looking at it, you know, whatever. You're never going to sell it. And then you'd walk back to your manager and they'd be like, what happened? What went wrong?
Yeah.
And then 5 minutes later, you walk up to someone and say, were you thinking about buying the PlayStation? They said, yeah, I've come in to buy it. And you go, oh, delicious. I'll which bundle do you want? I want the £400 one. Okay, let's do it. And then you walk back to your manager and you'd go, oh, congratulations. Oh, that's brilliant. Well done, Ollie. Yeah, it's gold star next to your name. I just think it's just completely arbitrary. I know that there are people who are better at sales.
Yeah.
But being better at sales seems to be the same as convincing somebody that they want something when they don't.
Well, exactly. So
which is wrong. Isn't that wrong?
I dislike good salespeople. People like yourselves.
People who are shit at their jobs.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Fine.
Mm.
But,
ineffective people.
Yeah.
Like
I mean,
me.
I've lost a lot of money... over the years because I've been talked into buying things I don't want.
You're a bit like my mum. She's like when you say scammed, have you actually fallen for...
Yeah.
Because that's what she does. She loves
it. Yeah, I have. I mean, my mum has as well. So my mum was really great because whenever I've been scammed, well, usually someone would go, why would you fall for that? My mum always understood because... So the worst thing is paints me in a poor light. When I was at university and... I got stopped on the street by this guy. He was like, "Hey, I'm from a modelling agency. I think you might be a really good model." And I was like, "Oh, really? You know?" Which is silly because quite clearly I'm not a model material. And he said, "Can I take your photo and send it to our head office?" And I said, "Sure."
Mm.
So he took my photo and he took my details and he said, "You know." If we're interested, we'll get in touch. And went off, and I didn't really think much more about it. And then a couple of weeks later, I got a call, and he was like, congratulations.
Wow.
You've been selected.
When can you get to Paris?
He was like, we think you've got what it takes. The head office, they're all right. And I was like, wow. And he said, have you ever wanted to be a model? And I said, no. And he said, what do you want to be? And I said, I kind of want to be an actress. And he said, well...
Congratulations, you've just been accepted.
He said, yeah, it was Rosie. Lots of people, they go from being models to actors. That's how they get into it.
Perfect.
Some of Cameron Diaz.
Cara Delevingne.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't you want to be Enchantress in Suicide Squad?
I mean, who doesn't?
Mm.
Who doesn't? What a great role that looks.
Mm.
Yeah.
Deliciously skimpy.
Yeah.
With no basis in the comic books either.
Oh, really? Interesting.
No. She doesn't dress like that in the comics. I mean, she has you know, like all women in comic books, she has cleavage and, yeah, you know.
But it's been skimpied up for the film.
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah, she's basically wearing, like, a chainmail bikini the entire time.
Well, Harley Quinn was, like, she, in the comic book, she's wearing a whole Joker's outfit, isn't she? I don't know, I don't know comics well enough.
Neither do I, really, yeah. But I do know that Harley Quinn is... Undoubtedly, Margot Robbie's been sexualised.
Yeah.
But there's she more is, of a... Yeah. She's quite... She is meant to be quite sexy,
to be quite sexy
in the comics.
She's like sexy Joker woman.
Well, she's been... She's, like, been kind of brainwashed into being a bit of a, like, villainous sex pot kind
yeah.
of... Very subservient to him. Has a quite weird sadomasochistic
yeah.
relationship with him. So I feel like casting a fit actress and sexualising her is... kind of justified.
Yeah, okay.
But maybe, I mean, they've changed the costume a lot, so maybe they've made it more skimpy, or I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I feel like she's meant to be hot, whereas Enchantress
is supposed to
not
just
really.
Be, yeah, come on, comic.
I don't think she's meant
movies.
To be like a. It's like Poison Ivy is meant to be sort of a seductive, or
yeah.
like Catwoman too. A lot of them are meant to be seductive, as it turns out.
Yeah.
But and maybe that's a problem. But at least. Portraying them as seductive in the movies makes sense,
yeah.
whereas with that one, it's like,
yeah,
come on, guys. Anyway, what happened? Did you end up being a movie star?
Well, what happened was then he said, so all you need to do is we just need, you know, a simple registration fee, which you'll get back in no time, because we'll start putting you up straight away.
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, right, and this is when my panic button in my head started going off, because he was trying to sell me something and I started to think straight and I kind of knew it was all a bit dodgy. And he said, so it's just £400. And so I was a student. I hadn't been a student for very long. So I was 18. I'd I think I'd been at university for 2 months. So
right.
I'd suddenly had my student loan.
Mm.
My student loan. And I raised this button. I said, oh, I don't know. I said, I think I might have to think about this.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said...
Don't
he said,
think.
He said, Rosie, do you know how people, actors get successful? I said, I know. And he went, because they don't think they do.
Ooh.
Yeah. He's like, they're impulsive.
Good advice.
They take a choice and they go for it. Are you
and
the
they
kind
give
of,
a stranger £400.
Yeah.
Do you know how Sean Penn got started?
You're the kind of person who, when they seize an opportunity, they take it. They take it. And I said, can't I just let you know? And he went, no. He said, I'm sorry, I need to know now. I'm on a schedule here. I need the money now. And I went, So I ended up giving him my bank details. And then as soon as I put down the phone, I thought, what have I done?
Mm.
So I rang up my mum in hysterics and I said, I've just done something awful.
Yeah.
I've just given this guy £400. And she said, right, ring up the bank now. And cancel just.
But you're still thinking he's only going to take £400. At this point.
Well, £400 to me seemed like.
Yeah, but presumably you could take
actually,
all of it.
Maybe it was £200.
I mean, okay,
but so bad.
Even if he said £200, he could still take whatever he wants.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
I think £200 to me already seemed massive. I don't know why. It's like I go under a trance and people. I just can't think. And so, but it was as soon as I put down the thing, I thought, what have I done? So then I rang up the bank and I said, look, I've just made this payment. Can you cancel it? And they were like. Too late, he's taken it. And to be fair, he had only taken £200.
Oh, nice guy. Yeah. But did your modelling career...
They never contacted me.
What? I thought Jean-Paul Gaultier would be on the phone.
It was all a lie.
Hello?
My modelling dream died.
Is this Rosie? I have heard you've paid your £200. Come and do my fashion show tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant French accent.
That was so good.
Just wanted to show I've got
talent. It really
talents.
Took me back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your next choice?
Well, I think I've been bad for feminists so far on this episode. So I need
undoubtedly. I did want to say, I mean, I feel like I'm going to put a disclaimer at the beginning.
So I need to boost my feminist credentials.
Yeah.
One thing I really don't like, it's a film. Well, actually, it's more than one film, but it is a particular film which I think embodies. It's called. Have you seen it? It's called The Ugly Truth.
No, I haven't.
It's a Katherine Heigl film.
Uh-oh.
And a bit like another film, which is quite similar in tone, called He's Not That Into You.
I know that one.
And both.
But that was written by a man, wasn't it?
Oh, was it? Was the film written by a man?
I believe that it. Yeah, I believe so. It's Greg Berendt.
Yeah.
I think he's called Berendt.
It made me so angry.
I think it was adapted from a thing he was doing on Twitter.
Yeah.
Or a book he wrote. No, I think he wrote a book.
Yeah.
He wrote a book about relationships.
Book. Yeah.
Called it He's Just Not Into You. And I think, I've not seen the film, so obviously you can tell us what the film's like. But what I heard about it was based on his assumption that women are always going, oh, why hasn't he texted me? Why hasn't he got in touch?
Yeah.
How can I figure him out? Whereas a guy who's genuinely really into someone will just do all those things.
He got that from a Sex and the City episode. I think because she realized that she's seeing this guy and she thought he had a good time. And he goes, "I'm sorry, I'm just not that into you." And she's like, "Oh," and she's really kind of, it's a wonderful revelation. She's like,
right,
"Wow,
right.
More men should just say it. It makes it so much easier."
Yeah, yeah.
And then she overhears two women talking. And she goes, and one of them's going, "He's just not texting back. And do you think he's busy?" And da da da. And she goes, "No, wait, he's." He's just not that into you. And they're like, what a fucking bitch.
Oh, so he plagiarised.
Yeah, and it's a very funny scene in Sex and City. And you're like, it's very funny. But I think that spawned a book, which then spawned the film.
Right,
so they took an initially funny idea and
based an entire film on it.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with the film?
The film, it's the same with The Ugly Truth. It's both films. What annoyed me about both of them is they're both purporting to be kind of for women, about women, and I don't know about He's Not That Into You, but The Ugly Truth is like written, produced, starring women.
Right.
And the He's Not That Into You, I don't know who wrote it, but I'm pretty sure it was directed by a woman, and the cast is sort of Drew Barrymore and Scarlett Johansson and Jennifer Connelly. And it's just horrendous about women. Both of them in their own unique, awful ways. In He's Not That Into You, it just shows women to be complete morons.
Really? In what way?
Well, it has these characters kind of cataloguing how women can't take a hint, basically.
Hmm.
And that they're all men obsessed.
Okay.
And you've got stupid little examples where Scarlett Johansson meets Bradley Cooper, but he's married, and they have a spark. And she meets Drew Barrymore, and she says, "Oh, I've met this guy, and he's really great." And Drew Barrymore's like, "Oh, how exciting!" And Scarlett Johansson goes, "Yeah, there's a real spark. The only problem is he's married."
Uh oh.
And Drew Barrymore goes, "Well, that is bad. But then, I've got a friend who met this guy, and he was married, but they had a really great spark. So they had an affair, and then he ended up leaving his wife." And he got together with her.
Oh, sounds ideal.
And the whole point of this scene was to illustrate that women will always, in their need to support other women, they'll always go, "Well, I've got a friend who this worked out for."
Right, right.
But it irritated me because I was like, no woman would actually say to a friend, "Yeah, go for that married guy. Do it."
Hmm.
And then it had this other character whose husband was cheating on her, and she was being all needy and, like, trying to dress up sexy to kind of, like, lure him back.
Oh.
And the whole point was, it was kind of going, look, she just can't pick up on the hint that he's not that into her. And it just, the whole film was so...
But they're married. What?
I'd be really cross. Just presenting women as, like, sort of needy women who can't get the hint and are all obsessed with men.
Mm.
It made me really cross. Makes me cross thinking about it. But The Ugly Truth is even worse.
Right.
So
what is The Ugly Truth?
The Ugly Truth. The Ugly Truth. Okay. So The Ugly Truth is that Katherine Heigl plays this uptight.
Mm.
Katherine Heigl plays this uptight TV...
I appreciate the edit point.
Thank you. Plays this uptight TV executive.
Mm.
And she's like, you know, she just can't relax, you know? And then... they end up producing the show with Gerald Butler, bloody Gerald Butler,
mm-hmm.
and he comes on and he's got this show where he's like, "Hey, women, like this is how you get a man," and he's like there like with two bikini clad women and like in the jacuzzi going, yeah, I'll show you how to get women. And he's like really kind of...
Oh, so the show's for men, how to get women, not the other way around. Okay.
No, it's not. It's for telling women how to get men.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but he's like really sexist and she's like, oh, you're such a pick, you know, and she's uptight.
I think they might fall in love.
Yeah. She's all uptight and he's like really like laid back and cool and he's sexist, but he's fun. And she's like disgusted by how sexist he is and that she's having to produce this program. But then she falls for her handsome neighbour who's a doctor.
Mm.
And she's like, oh, but I'm so uptight I can't possibly get him. So she enlists Gerald Butler's help to help her be more like cool and fun so that she can get her man.
How does that work out?
Well, like, he does things like he gives her a vibrator to stick in her pants when they go to a restaurant, and he, like, presses the button so that she, like, is, like, more sexy free, and she has to pretend...
What, a remote control dildo?
Yeah, it's, like, it's a really weird scene, and it's all... The whole film is so women-hating, and...
Jesus.
And, like, and also she sort of has to pretend that she's really, like...
Wait a minute, hang on. I haven't got to pass this. So, there's a scene in this film where Catherine Heigl has
a vibrator in her pants, and she goes to a restaurant, and he's got the remote control.
And at key moments, to help her on her date,
she just kind of relaxes more, and she's like a bit more like, hey, lightens up, or whatever. I don't know. I can't remember. I've just been finding it all
very insulting. So she's just like, so we're about to do work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's supposed to be like,
yeah,
ah,
I can already see the
funny scene.
Yeah.
And then, but there's. Awful, and then also she has to sort of be more laid back and wear more sexy clothing and all this sort of thing. And of course, because she's now being how men want women to be, she starts winning over this doctor and he starts falling for her.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, actually, Gerard Butler and her, there's chemistry there.
Of course, it's Gerard Butler.
There's Gerard Butler. But there are some awful speeches in it. There are two which really are kind of ingrained in my memory. So one is this, when she's having a drink with Gerard Butler, and she goes, you know, he's talking about women and how bad they are, and she goes, who did this to you? Who was she? And he goes, who was she? She was lots of people. And he starts going, she was the woman who was too needy and blah 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 blah, or she was or this other woman who cheated on me with my best friend, or this other woman who like couldn't, you know, like, always had a migraine. And then he's just, like, listing all these awful women and all the awful things women do. And she's there, like, nodding sympathetically, like, yeah.
I'm on his side.
So, women are so shit, poor Gerard. And... it's just awful scene. And we're supposed to be going, oh god, yeah, he's been heartbroken not just by one woman but all these rubbish women.
This isn't satire, this movie.
No, it's just, I can't believe it even exists. It's so terrible. And what's especially terrible about it is Catherine Heigl, after she did Knocked Up, she was very like, oh, I have a problem with this movie because it's actually really sexist and it paints women as shrews. You know, she's got a point, but then she ruins it by doing The Ugly Truth, which she co-produced, which is like the worst film ever.
I didn't think that the women in Knocked Up were that...
No, I agree. I think maybe she's got a valid point in that the women in it are all uptight.
They're not as fun as
back.
The men. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I just think you don't have a leg to stand on if you're then going to go and produce The Ugly Truth. But this is... there's this other bit in the film which really upset me, where she's with her handsome doctor, and he's going, and he says, I love you. And she goes, really? And he goes, yeah. And she goes, why? And he goes, well, you know, most women, they're so uptight, and they always nag you, and, you know, they want you to be tidy, and they, you know, they just can't be spontaneous, and blah, 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 blah. And then she's listening to all this, and she starts looking sad, and she goes, I have a confession to make. She went, I am uptight, and I do have to be on time for things, and I do nag men, and actually, I've been pretending this whole time, because I wanted you to like me.
So the ugly truth is...
That women are shit.
Yeah, that's all women's fault.
They're all neurotic and uptight and shit. And then at the end of the movie, Gerard, you know, they inevitably get together.
Of course.
And Gerard Butler goes, I love you. And she goes, but why? And then he goes, fuck knows. And then they kiss.
Oh.
No, it's horrible.
That's sweet.
It's horrible.
It sounds
like he's like, oh, even though you're not tight, shrew, a woman, that's just what women are, and I just love you. And it's just the whole, I hate it.
Yeah, but she managed, she learned
horrible,
that she could be
horrible film.
A typical uptight, horrible woman and still get Gerard Butler. That's the message of the film. You've missed it. It's actually astonishingly progressive, this movie.
We're supposed to whisper that he never get, like, she has to change. She has to be like, oh, you're so uptight, lady.
Hmm.
He, even though he has a stupid sexist program where he, like, sits in jacuzzis with women in bikinis and slaps their bums, we're supposed to be like, no, he's a fun-loving guy. And he never has any kind of emotional growth other than deciding, actually, he does love Katherine Heigl, despite the fact that she's rubbish and uptight. Hmm. So annoying. What an annoying film. Why does this film even exist?
When did it come out?
Oh, I don't know, a couple of years ago.
It still hurts, huh?
It really does. the pain is real.
Gerard Butler's done quite a lot of those roles.
Yeah, he does.
Where he plays, like, the cocky man who teaches a woman a thing or two.
Yeah, because there's one bounty hunter, isn't it, where he, like, chains himself to Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
And
damn, like, right. It's about time someone chained Jennifer Aniston up.
Yeah, that bloody woman. Yeah.
Running around.
Shut Jennifer, not getting pregnant. What's she about? What's she doing? Come on!
Clock's ticking.
Yeah.
Someone needs to chain her up to a radiator, impregnate her for her own good.
I know, that's actually got dark. Dark. Oh, bloody Gerard Butler. That's a horrible man. I remember the good old days when he was in Dracula 2000.
Were those the good old days?
It was a very bad horror movie, because I do like a good old horror movie. And it was very bad, Dracula 2000. And he was Dracula. And you thought, this man is destined for great things.
Nope.
He wasn't destined. He was destined for bad rom-coms that are insulting to women. And Katherine Heigl, what were you doing?
She's a gender traitor.
She's a traitor to the feminist movement. No, like, you know, I like... She's made some mistakes. And now she's on bad TV.
Can you think of a film that you've seen recently that you thought had a good portrayal of women in it? Or one that you thought, yeah, this is actively engaged in, you know, these kind of issues, and it's done a good job?
Do you know what I just finished watching, actually? It's not a film. I just saw Fleabag on TV. Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
It's so good.
Is it?
It's so good. Well, what's good about it is it has, like, a very flawed protagonist who's a woman, but she's flawed in a way that you're not used to seeing on TV. So she, like, she's pretty shitty to the men around her, and she's sleeps around, and she, like... She's very fun. Like, she's a believable messed up person, as opposed to a messed up person that fits the role of messed up women you usually get based on.
I've heard a lot of good things about that.
Yeah, like, it's
my
brilliant.
My mummy says it's really good.
Yeah, your mum is right.
I've heard a lot of people on... No, I've seen a lot of people on Facebook saying it's good.
I think it's exciting when you see a woman portrayed like that and you realise that it's not... You don't usually get that.
My girlfriend's a big fan of Tina Fey in 30 Rock.
I've seen 30 Rock.
She says that Tina Fey is the best female character.
Yeah.
Or her favourite female character. Certainly in comedy, anyway.
I
can kind of see why, because they're...
I need to watch 30 Rock. I do like Tina Fey. Have you watched Orange is the New Black?
Don't like it.
Oh, do you not like it?
No.
I think it's wonderful.
I think that Piper is possibly the most irritating protagonist I've ever come across in any drama show.
She is irritating, but I quite like her. I like that character. I like the fact that she's sort of neurotic and self-obsessed. She's like the worst person in there.
Mm.
That's what I quite like about it. Like,
what I like... My theory is that the writers have wanted to make a show that's got all sorts of different people in it.
Yeah.
From all different types of backgrounds.
Well, she's their Trojan horse, isn't she?
Exactly.
Kind of use her to tell the other stories.
But I feel like they are satirising the need for us to have a Trojan horse by saying, all right, you can have your white woman as the protagonist in this otherwise very diverse show, but to teach you a lesson, we're going to make her fucking awful. Teach you a goddamn lesson about wanting to have this character in there, white America. There you go. There's your white protagonist, but she's going to be so shit that you hope she dies.
I think there's probably something in that, but I don't hope she dies. I like her. I have a soft spot for her character.
Have you watched Jessica Jones?
Yes.
That's a good one.
That is very good.
I think that's a really good one.
She's brilliant.
I'm very happy that that's a thing that they've done.
Yeah.
Because I don't know, like with the extra time you get for a TV series, they've really fleshed out a lot of the, I don't know, and it seems like the villain, they've done something really interesting with the villain and his relationship to her,
yeah,
and like the portrayal of an abusive relationship or a horrible ex that's, yeah, stalking you is really it does what the best superhero stuff does really effectively, which is to use the sort of superhero plot as a quite close metaphor or analogy for,
yeah,
a real world issue that you can, like the bit in X-Men where that everyone references, where the guy kind of comes out to his parents,
yeah,
as a mutant,
yeah,
but it's clear all the stuff they're saying back are the sorts of things that gay people might hear from their parents, like, can't you just stop being a mutant?
Yeah.
Or can't you just stop being gay, you know? So, yeah, Jessica Jones was a really good,
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I agree. I think that was brilliant.
I don't feel
and
like...
And she's so cool, because she's not... it's like when you hear women... There's a TED Talk with a woman who's been in domestic... She was in a domestic violent relationship, and she talks about how she never saw herself as a victim of domestic violence, because she was like, I'm a strong woman. She was like, I'm a strong woman in love with a difficult man. And I quite like how Jessica Jones is this character who's been through something awful, but is always... funny and sharp and strong.
Yeah.
So I think that's really good, because of course people who are subjected to domestic violence or anyone is subjected to anything awful, don't fall into the stereotype of just being a victim.
Yeah, and I like that she's still, like, the sex in it.
Yeah.
It's not like sort of soft romantic sex. She likes
proper sex.
Yeah, she likes.
Yeah.
Sex, like erotic. Not for love necessarily.
Yeah.
She sees Luke Cage and thinks he's a fucking hottie and I want to bang him. And does.
Do you think he's,
and it's great.
I'm sad because I was looking at the IMDb for his, you know, the Luke Cage series, and she doesn't appear to be in it.
Well, of course not. He's got to establish his own thing, isn't he?
No, but I really like them as a couple.
But they're doing a thing where they're all in it. They're doing one called The Defenders.
Oh my god, I'm so looking forward to that.
And it's gonna be Daredevil and
I like Daredevil.
Whoever that is. And Jessica Jones and Luke Cage.
Daredevil, though, I felt that... I like Daredevil, but I feel Foggy and Karen are rather drippy. And they drag him down.
Oh, really?
I don't like them. I just think they're a bit drippy. She's like, you know, she's like very kind of like, what's going on with you?
You know what's...
She's kind of irritating. And he's annoying. He's like, no, why can't you just be my friend? And I'm like, guys... Give him a break.
Yeah.
He's like saving New York.
Yeah.
Where Elektra was great fun.
I thought that...
he's a bit chaste, though. Have you noticed? He never has any sex.
Daredevil?
Yeah, he doesn't have sex.
Sex with Elektra, didn't he?
No. In the past...
Maybe I just imagined
when they were, like, together.
Hmm.
But he... I feel really sorry for him, because
I can't have sex. He's blind. He's got a disability. He can't see anything. How can he find the parts?
Because he's got great senses, isn't he? I bet he'd be really good in bed, but I just feel he never gets the chance.
Oh.
It's just, he never has anything going on. And I'm sure in the comics, wasn't he supposed to be a bit of a ladies' man? And you get the impression that he is a ladies' man, but he never has any sex in the whole
series.
They
keep referring to his past, don't
yeah.
they? Yeah. Like, he's the ladies' man. Remember that girl,
And then he almost gets with them, and then they don't have sex. And I'm just so gunning for him to just have sex, and not in a flashback.
Mm.
Like, just, you know...
Like now, contemporary
just
sex,
now.
Please.
I just want to see Daredevil having sex. Not the whole thing, just, like, I just want to know that it's happening.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
You know?
No. You know what annoys me about Karen?
What? Oh, Karen. She's
this,
so dreamy. Oh, yes.
This mole. This big growth that's on her face.
Yeah.
Get rid of it, Karen.
Oh, Karen.
Laser it off. You know what I mean?
No,
this is Hollywood. The least you could do.
Why aren't you conforming?
I mean, it's off-putting.
I think
she's
I
a beautiful
could deal
woman.
With that if she was less drippy. I feel the problem is when she's drippy, it
And she has the
and she, you can have one or the other.
Yeah, either laser it off or harden up.
Yeah, harden up, Karen.
Well, I think think we're done?
Yeah.
How do you feel?
Great.
Do you think that you've represented Busby? Sorry about that. There's a... Excuse me. There's a rabbit shuffling away in the background.
Yay.
He seems to be... This is too distracting.
While I get this bunny out of here...
Yes.
How do you feel you come across?
Inarticulate, rambly, and possibly damaging for the feminist movement.
Yeah, poor representation, I think. Who do you think I could get? Which comedians out there do you think I could get to kind of balance this? I don't want people going around saying I've got a misogynistic podcast.
Yeah, you need to get a good maybe just get Bridget Christie. Maybe aim high. Get Bridget Christie.
I think that might be naive. I think she'll come down to Mitchell.
Look, Bridget, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. I've just had a woman on the podcast.
Just had Rosie Holt. Say no more. I'm coming round.
She's been a bit shit at representing the old women.
Yeah, I was hoping it would be more of a progressive episode, but...
I am a feminist. I'm just an inept one. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's been good fun.
That's been great.
Wish you all the best.
I wish you all the best.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Ollie Bettesworth's downloadable weekly podcast programme with my guest, Rosie Holt. As always, if you feel like supporting the show, please do leave a comment or a rating on the iTunes page, or tell a friend to check it out if you've enjoyed it and want to spread the word. Other than that, I'm going to go. Guys, thanks for listening. Bye! Seems a bit anticlimactic after last time.